Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good afternoon. At the tone, Pacific Daylight Time will be...
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
One step closer to my own personal hell.
This is Primetime on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.
We expect the best. We're not afraid to break someone. Do you hear me?
Primetime is your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Go ahead and clap. Mediocrity deserves applause.
Isaac Robb.
I'm miserable. I had to get up at 10 o'clock this morning.
Jason Sakanik.
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome in just after 5 o'clock on a beautiful Monday. Happy Labor Day to everyone out there. Maybe you're coming back into town. Maybe you're out there laboring like us. Or maybe you're sitting in the backyard somewhere with that beautiful AM radio turned on. Wherever you are, and thank you for tuning in and listening to this lovely program of ours. We covered a lot of college football in hour one. We had Stockwatch. We did in the news. And then, of course, coming up here, we'll get into Club 1080. I've got bar etiquette questions, and we still have plenty of college football and NFL news to get to later on in this hour. Rop is out. Mike Lynch in with me. Tip of the cap to Mike for working on this Labor Day as well. The NFL was... some interesting stuff going on. Then, like I said, we'll get into this hour, but you know, we got the big boys kicking off on Thursday. It's great. We had a full week one slate now of college football, which I don't know about you, but I felt that it was a little bit of an underwhelming weekend in college football. I didn't think that there was much drama or really, to be honest with you, many particularly good games, even a lot of the upsets that happened. It was kind of a collective, did anyone care that Purdue lost to Nevada?
Or that Iowa State had to go to three overtimes to beat Northern Iowa?
There just wasn't a lot of the big boys. In fact, Oregon-Auburn was the best game of the weekend, and it drew the highest rating and got like a five share.
Well,
and unfortunately for fans up here, it didn't go the way that you wanted it to go.
I was an insane person on Saturday, and I actually watched sports from 4:30 in the morning until 7:30 at night.
Did you really?
With like an hour break to go for a run. And I also napped for an hour in the middle. That was what I did on Saturday. So I watched a lot of college football. I thought there were some pretty good games. I really enjoyed Boise State versus Florida State. I thought that was a good one.
See, and I turned that off after the first half and didn't even get to see the second half. It was kind of one of those ones where I assumed Florida State was blowing them out. And Boise didn't look that competitive. So I kind of went away from it and then got an alert on my phone and was like, what? Like, Boise State came roaring back. And I'm like, oh, my God. Someone texted me and was like, dude, Taggart's gone. I was like, what? Like, they were killing them. Then I looked down and saw that Boise State had won. My big takeaway was a lot of teams that people were saying were going to be good or going to be back were kind of a big letdown. Florida State was a letdown. I thought Nebraska looked really poor. Nebraska ended up winning, I think, 35-21. But they got a punt return for a touchdown, a fumble return, and I think an INT. And they still only won, I think, by 14 points over like the little sister Mary of the poor. Nebraska wasn't that good. Not a good week for the ACC. 9 teams in the ACC lost. Purdue kind of crapped the bed, obviously, against Nevada, so not great for the Big Ten. The SEC had 4 horrific losses, including the Tennessee one. And then the Pac-12 didn't have a good weekend at all. Because even the teams that won in the Pac-12, see, USC didn't look very good. Stanford didn't look very good. Oregon let one go through their fingertips, and then we had obviously some bad losses towards the bottom half of the Pac-12. So I just, in general, I thought the top 5 or 6 teams proved why they're there. And then I think just kind of in general, it was nice to have college football back, but outside of Oregon-Auburn, there wasn't a whole lot of games that held my attention.
Yeah, the hype of week one kept me going through my day of watching football, but you're right. I enjoyed Boise State versus Florida State. I liked the Iowa State game. I was keeping an eye on that because it was close, and any game that goes to 3 overtimes is exciting, and you're rooting for an FCS upset of a ranked team too because they were playing Northern Iowa. Obviously, Oregon-Auburn dominated it. I watched my team in Syracuse play at 3 o'clock on the computer and kept an eye on all the other stuff. So it was fun. It was just great to have football back, but you're right. It wasn't super interesting outside of a couple of games.
Yeah. And then you had Hugh Freeze coaching from a hospital bed, and you had the Jackson State getting a mascot getting a penalty for jumping in on a celebration.
I saw that too. Yeah.
That was fantastic. All right. We'll talk a little college football and the NFL. And don't forget, hey, Thursday, the NFL's here, the big boys. That I'm actually pretty excited about. So some news and notes to the NFL we'll get to at the Hot 5 at 5, which we'll get into right now.
Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, golly, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
It's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5. Refreshed on the fan by Frostbrewed Coors Light.
Number five.
Major League scoreboard, plenty of Labor Day action. Indians up right now, 3-0 on the White Sox. The Rangers gave the Yankees, 4-7-0. The Mets have decided to be halfway decent again after losing 7 straight. They hammered the Nationals today, 7-3. In actual meaningful baseball, we have to scroll all the way down. Phillies beat the Reds 7-1. Cardinals 3-1 over the Giants. And then the Cubbies kept pace 5-1. Over the Mariners, and the Astros took out Milwaukee 3-2. Because you look through the standings, outside of the Central and the NL, there's really not a whole lot of division races that mean anything, right? I mean, I don't think there's another one that's within 5 games.
Twins Indians is what now?
I think it's at 4 or 5. No, it's 6.
Wow.
Yeah,
Twins falling back away again.
Yeah, the Twinkies up by 6. So really the only division that's within 6 games is the Central. The Cardinals right now have a 3-game lead over Chicago. Milwaukee's fallen all the way 7 back. But the wild cards will keep it interesting. There's a handful of teams in both the American and the National, 5 or 6 teams that are technically within striking distance.
Number 4.
The U.S. Open rages on, although as Mike told you in his update, the defending champs and number one seed in both the men's and women tournaments have already been bounced. Naomi Osaka, she was hampered by a bum knee. She was upset, and so she joins Novak Djokovic as being the number one seeds that are bounced out. And I don't know what it is about the U.S. Open this year, but just in general, tennis to me, it's lost some of its luster. I know that Osaka is trying to kind of be the next one, and you know, Coco is trying to get a little traction on the women's side, but I just feel like for me, tennis couldn't be any further off my radar than it's ever been in my life, because I like tennis. I like, you know, when the majors roll around. There's just something about the, even Wimbledon this year, which I normally get into, it's just been a bit of a passing fancy for me.
I mean, if you're not a big tennis fan, I think, but you like sports, people go through phases with the secondary sports where you get really into it for a year and you watch it a lot and then you kind of fade out again.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about tennis. I'm with you. I haven't watched it much the last few years, but a couple of years ago, I watched every major. I was into it. It just comes and goes.
Yeah. Little college football note, just from a little bit of a local angle to it, and that is, you know, Tyler Helinski, who we know had the obviously the horrible tragedy with taking his own life a couple years ago at Washington State. There was a great piece that ESPN did on the Helinski family and what they're doing to try to raise awareness to it. And there was another Helinski brother who was one of the highest ranked quarterbacks in the country, and he is slated to take over the starting job at South Carolina. We know South Carolina lost their opener to Mack Brown, of all people, who did the weird, awkward dance for North Carolina. So it sounds like Ryan Helinski is going to take over the starting job there, and that's just kind of one of those families that I'm rooting for. I know the Helinski family obviously is doing a lot to try to raise awareness about mental health, and it's a big football family, and I don't think that this gives you any sort of relief or whatever, but if anyone could use some positive news and a little bit of a shot in the arm, it's the Helinski family. So
if you're a Northwest football fan, maybe you pull for South Carolina this year.
I got a little bit of that going for me, although I hate Will Muschamp, so that's a little off for me, but hopefully we do that.
I think the Helinski family can outweigh hating Will Muschamp.
Exactly. Other news, we do have one more college football game tonight. We have yet to see the AP Top 25. That's because we do have Notre Dame and Louisville going tonight. In fact, that game is probably getting ready to kick off.
It's right already now. Started, and Notre Dame's already up 7-0.
Are they really?
Yep.
Yeah.
First drive took 3 minutes, and they already scored. Louisville is hot garbage.
Yeah.
And they were last year. They have a new head coach, Satterfield, from Appalachian State, so he could turn the program around, but they're in a bad spot.
Yeah, I was listening to Chris Fowler today, and he was talking about it, and he said that while they're trying to be energized down there at Louisville, sounds like the cupboard there could be pretty bare, and it may take a couple of years. And Notre Dame is actually really good. I just feel like Notre Dame gets no respect. Like everyone, I heard today Paul Feinbaum saying that Notre Dame should never be allowed in the college football playoff again after their embarrassment against Clemson. Clemson beat Alabama, but worse than Notre Dame. So look, Notre Dame has a real schedule, and Notre Dame is a team that no one's talking about. I think they're sleeping on them, but Brian Kelly's a damn good coach, and Notre Dame's a good football program.
I think people sleep on them because they don't win the big games.
Yeah. So. Reception.
Number one.
Gotta prove it.
Number one.
Number one.
Well, we're talking about the NFL. It does start on Thursday, and over the weekend, plenty of moves to be made, including some of the more bizarre ones. Can anyone tell me what the hell Bill O'Brien and the Houston Texans are doing? I love that he came out over the weekend and basically said, I don't care what you think of me. Remember, they don't have a GM. They fired their GM, so they don't have one. So it sounds like Bill O'Brien is making decisions there, and they gave away Jadeveon Clowney for like a warm ham sandwich and are paying half of his salary to Seattle.
Yeah, they're still paying $7 million for him, and they got two linebackers who Seattle was likely going to cut anyway.
Exactly. So basically, Seattle is giving up a third-round pick, essentially, for Jadeveon Clowney, and in the salary versus the two guys they sent versus what they have to pay Clowney, it's like a $3 million difference. Who, by the way, Clowney was practicing up in Seattle. It was highway robbery. And then they gave away two ones and a two.
To get Tunsil.
Yeah, and Kenny Stills, who's a serviceable guy at best. Who knows what the hell the Texans are doing? And then the big move, no news from Ezekiel Elliott. It sounds like those contract negotiations, which we thought were about to be a done deal over the weekend, they've stalled as Elliott and his agent apparently have gone back to make previous demands that they thought they had worked out. And then Jacoby Brissett received a new two-year, $30 million deal from the Colts. Basically, what this does is they're giving him the money they would have given him by franchise tagging him. So he has to play out the rookie deal, which is two more years. And this buys them 2 years to figure out what they want to do with Jacoby Brissett. And if it turns out he ends up being pretty good, they can still franchise tag him without having it be a ridiculous amount. So this is one of those moves where it's a space holder for him. They're going to give Brissett like a vote of confidence. And then you got about 2 years to figure it out. They also signed Brian Hoyer to be the backup. So basically, if you played quarterback for the New England Patriots at some point behind Tom Brady, the Indianapolis Colts would like to have you on their roster as one of theirs.
Probably feel the same way about Jimmy Garoppolo too. Just quickly, the Dolphins might be doing the best potential tank job I've ever seen in the NFL because they have this as their draft picks for the next few years. This year's draft coming up, they have their own and Houston's first round pick. They have their own and New Orleans second round pick and Miami's or their own third round pick. 2021, they have their own in Houston's first round pick, their own in Houston's second round pick, and their own third round pick.
Although they're going to tell you that they're not tanking, even though they're tanking.
That's tanking, right?
But remember, you gotta hit with those guys. Cleveland did this a while back, and remember they wasted it. They took the Johnny Manziel, and they had a bunch of guys, Trent Richardson. They had all these stockpile of picks, and they didn't do jack squat with it. So remember, even though you've got a ton of draft capital, you still have to choose wisely. Like, if you make bad choices, but yes, if there is a team that could get this pointed around in a hurry, it's the Dolphins, who have an official S-ton of draft capital. And yes, I do believe that that is the official term. It is a S-ton of capital. What do we got? Who's the Hot 5? It's brought to you by Coors Light. Enter to win an Oregon-branded Yeti cooler anywhere Coors Light is sold. Coors Light, a mountain cold refreshment made to chill. All right, we come back. We'll go right there. We'll talk a little Pac-12 football, and we'll start with what was the marquee matchup and one that you really feel bad letting it get away. Oregon-Auburn talk when we come back here on The Fan.
The Fan.
Welcome back in, talking a little Pac-12 football. Not the best week for the Pac-12. I wouldn't say it was the worst. I'd give you the ACC and the SEC as well. But when you're the Pac-12, your reputation is going to take a bigger hit because you don't have the teams on top. The ACC has warmed over garbage. I love that all the talk from ESPN and the Feinbaums of the world and everything is how bad the Pac-12 is. And no one says boo about the ACC. The ACC had 9 teams lose. 9. If you took Clemson out of the ACC, I think the Mountain West is a better league right now than what the ACC is. Although Syracuse may end up being halfway decent. But it's the ACC sucks, but they've got Clemson to build it up. The SEC had 4 bad losses. There may not be a worse loss in the country than what happened to Tennessee. Tennessee was 25-point favorites over, was it Georgia Southern?
Georgia State.
Georgia State. And they lost at home.
Yeah.
I mean, my word. That's
at the end of the game, I was watching a little bit of it. I don't think it was particularly close at the end. I think they won by 2 touchdowns, Georgia State did. I mean, or something like that.
That's a by far worse weekend than anything the Pac-12 had. But the Pac-12 has a reputation problem. And one of the Pac-12's teams that was supposed to be one of the marquees went on the road, neutral site. But by the way, kudos to Duck fan. I did not think that that was nearly as Auburn slanted as we thought it was going to be. I heard from a couple people that were there that on third down, you could hear some of it was still a largely an Auburn crowd, but it wasn't like 80-20. I've heard everything from 60-40 to maybe 70-30, but I thought the Oregon fans showed up. But on a national stage where everyone was watching, I think Oregon showed up and earned some respect. And yet at the end of the day, people are still going to remember that you let that one get away. It's not like you went in there and got blown out. But when I was watching that game, to me, I came away with the notion that I thought Oregon was the more talented team. I thought Oregon was the better team. And I thought Oregon shot themselves in the foot, let Auburn hang around. And then Auburn made a couple of plays down the stretch. But it doesn't matter because the national perception is going to be that in another big time game, you went down against a good, not great Auburn team. And I think this is what's going to hurt the Pac-12 and Oregon's reputation as the year goes on. Auburn's going to lose games. Auburn isn't that good.
Right.
Auburn's offense sucks. It does. Bo Nix, for all the hype that he's going to get, I heard everything. I saw articles from the legend begins, and someone saying by the end of the year, he'll be a Heisman candidate. I don't know what game they were watching. I thought Bo Nix was terrible. First off, I thought Oregon's defense was great. I thought they came prepared and they had that kid running for his life, and he underthrew just about every ball he threw. Even the touchdown pass at the end was grossly underthrown. Kid just ended up making a nice play on it. It turned out that by underthrowing it, it put his receiver in position. And he had the one scramble play on fourth down that, you know, he got the first down by 6 inches. But Bo Nix wasn't good at all. And Oregon should have never allowed that in the first place. Oregon had a chance to put that thing away early. It should have been minimum 21-3, could have been 28-3, and that game is over. I really did. I thought in the first half that Oregon was going to blow them out. I thought Oregon was bigger. I thought they were stronger. I thought they were faster. They were more aggressive. They had the better quarterback. The defense came to play. I thought the offensive line was dominant. And then as the game wore on, it reminded me of Stanford from last year. Great first half. Should have been up by a lot more. And then got conservative. Didn't make any adjustments in the second half. And really, after that opening drive in the second half, what did Oregon do on offense? Nothing. And here's the thing, you can say all you want that they got really conservative, but they threw the ball after that drive. I think they threw the ball 7 of the next 8 plays. But in the second half, Justin Herbert, he was, I think, 16 of 18, and he went for like 106 yards. I mean, they would not throw the ball more than 3 and 4 yards down the field. So if you want to talk about conservative, it wasn't just being conservative running the ball. They were conservative throwing the ball. And Auburn figured it out. I saw there was an advanced analytics. I think Dan Orlovsky was the one that had this. He said that on all but of 2 of Justin Herbert's completions, and he's taking out the little bubble screen stuff, the one step and throw it to the outside, the Jalen Red stuff. He said twice in that game did Justin Herbert have an open receiver downfield. Twice. Auburn figured out that they could stack the line of scrimmage, that they could play man coverage on the outside, and not one of Oregon's receivers had the ability to beat anyone from Auburn downfield, nor did Oregon even make an attempt at that. And then Oregon was running into stacked boxes, and that Auburn front was playing aggressive. And even with that, I thought there were still some plays to be made, and I thought the O-line blocked pretty well. I thought the backs left a lot of meat on the bone. You put all those things together, along with shooting yourself in the foot time after time and being, I think, 4 of 14. 4 of 14 on third down. I mean, all of those things are a recipe for disaster. Yeah. There's not one thing that you can point to. And I know I've heard everything from Arroyo needs to go, Cristobal is a fraud, Justin Herbert isn't as good as anyone thought. Why, with a great offensive line, weren't able to run the ball? It's like we have all these like things being thrown against the wall, and in reality, there's not one thing. I think it was a collective effort there that you let this one get away. And unfortunately, I think this goes into a very short time period we have, but I think this goes into the third, maybe the fourth time you can look back on a game and say, to me, there was no excuses for being this ill-prepared and for not having execution. And at some point, I do think that coaches have to answer for that when you're that talented and you're not making the plays that you need to. I think it's a little knee-jerk to say that Cristobal can't coach or that Arroyo is the worst offensive, you know, play caller in the country. Like, we all make these sweeping judgments afterwards. Oregon's going to be good and Oregon's going to win a lot of games, but this one isn't going to silence any of Cristobal or, more importantly, Arroyo's critics.
You said it earlier in the show and I thought it was a good point. In the third quarter, when Oregon had been outplaying them for most of that game, and it was only what, like a 10-point game at that point?
Yep.
Or 7-point game? The worry was there. You've been outplaying them, but you're only up by 7. There was that oh crap thought of Oregon's going to find a way to lose this game, aren't they? And I think a lot of that feeling comes from the last year. And if you want to include Taggart's staff too, because a lot of the guys on the staff now are under Taggart, last 2 years, you've seen this as a recipe that Oregon has lost games that they should not have lost because of a lot of the cocktail of things that you're talking about that have all gone together. For me, if I had to pick one reason, I think it's the play calling. It's the conservative play calling. It hurts the Ducks substantially down the stretch. Play calling was great in the first half. I loved it. I watched the game and went, wow, Arroyo's really learned from his mistakes last year. I'm seeing a lot of creative different looks out there that's really confusing the Auburn defense.
They and got then, gashed early on. Yeah. Auburn was on their heels.
And the
and
second
then
half
Auburn
starts,
made adjustments and Oregon didn't.
And Oregon did not adjust. And that's been another thing we've seen a lot too, is Oregon doesn't make halftime adjustments as well as some of the other teams, doesn't matter when you're playing Cal or whoever.
But it matters against Auburn.
Exactly.
When you have a team that's playing that aggressive on the outside and they're playing man coverage, and then you've got 7 or an 8-man box that's playing downhill, and Oregon was slanting. Auburn was slanting. They were shooting gaps, trying to blow up that Oregon run game. There is gaps behind the linebackers and in front of the safeties. You have to be able to attack the middle of the field. You have to be able to attack the seams or be able to throw the ball on the outside. And when you've got a quarterback as talented as Justin Herbert, and I get it. I've said on this program many times that he's got a lot to prove, that he has to start winning some of these big games, but I also think you have to put him in position. I don't think one time in the second half after that first drive did they try to push the ball downfield. Did they try to get aggressive and force Auburn to back off a little bit or try to mix up the run game and try to get outside with it? And they did not end up running the ball. If I told you, you watched those first couple drives that Oregon was going to end up with 90 yards rushing, dude, Diane Verdell was gashing Auburn at the beginning of that game. And then as the game wore on, Auburn made an adjustment and Oregon couldn't run the ball and they wouldn't throw the ball downfield. And it left you with a very stagnant offense. And that's the frustrating part. It felt like they were playing not to lose as opposed to win. And they let Auburn hang around and it ended up biting in the ass. Because and I'll give the defense a ton of credit. I know the end of the game, right? They didn't come up with the stop they needed. I thought Oregon's defense was great. I really did. I thought they made Knicks look like a true freshman playing. And even
Andy Avalos appears to be the right kind of hire because he at least has a complex enough defensive scheme that it confuses the other team.
They were multiple. They were aggressive. I loved the way they attacked. And they got put in horrific situations inside the red zone twice. And they held Auburn to field goals both of those times. I mean, that's all you could ask from your defense outside of coming up with one stop at the end when you weren't able to do it. Like that Knicks play, right? The was it 4th and 3? And he dove. He half a yard short and you come away with a big victory. But, you know, close isn't going to cut it. And now you have to be perfect the rest of the way. I do think that anyone saying that, oh, it's the same old Oregon. Oregon's going to win a lot of games. They are. Because Herbert may not be as good as some of the hype around him. And believe me, I ask that question all the time. What has he ever done to deserve it? Herbert is a very talented kid to me without a ton on his resume. And I think it's fair to ask those questions. He's still a really talented player. And the backs you have and the offensive line you have, and if your defense plays like that, Oregon is going to win a lot of ball games. But is it enough? Because this is another one, like you said, Washington State, Utah, Arizona, Stanford, now Auburn, all games to me that you got out-schemed. that you weren't prepared for.
You were outcoached in the second half, yeah. For sure.
And that's, you know, if you want to be a big-time program, it's not about just having athletes, because the Jims and Joes are coming. They can recruit. And you can see athletically the difference that this team has. There are some horses out there. I do think the depth is still an issue because I think you got worn down in the second half. But when you play good teams, when you play UW, when you play the Utahs, when you play the Washington States, and you get into these tight games, are you going to be able to execute? Are you going to be able to scheme? So I think there's a lot to be answered for Oregon, but anyone thinking that this season's over after one tough loss to Auburn, Oregon's going to give people a lot of problems with the talent they have. All right, we come back, a bigger look around week one of college football. Primetime here on The Fan.
Primetime with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back in. Club 1080 coming up here in about 20 minutes or so. We'll talk a little bar etiquette, amongst other things. Question: Louisville, Notre Dame right now. Now, is Louisville making a ball game out of this?
Well, it's tied, and they already have the ball and are driving into the end zone, towards the end zone again. So,
go Cardinal.
Go Cardinals.
Oh, he just dropped that ball in the end zone.
Well, they're saying it was incomplete because he got control.
Maybe he didn't. So this would put him up 14-7 if this counts?
Yeah, it would put him up 14-7.
I'll tell you this. I'm not like Notre Dame. I could take it or leave it.
How quickly that changed, by the way. We're like, Louisville sucks. Like,
I love Notre Dame's look. Like, look, whatever you think of Notre Dame, I get people are tired of them, but I don't know if there's a better looking team than Notre Dame.
I like their classic jerseys, but the stuff that they've done recently
with Under Armour
is so bad.
Yeah, but they went to that new shiny gold helmet. Maybe I'm just an old fuddy-duddy. But I just love watching Notre Dame. Like, when I turn on, there's just certain uniforms. I'm just a classic guy in general. Like, when I see the Yankees and Dodgers, that to me looks like Major League Baseball.
That's why you were probably frustrated when they were wearing those stupid fan jerseys that weekend.
Yeah, I was like, what the hell, man? I got Yankees, Dodgers. And I actually didn't mind, in general, the white and black, because everyone wore them.
Yeah.
Everyone wore black and white.
By the way, it was a weekend about creativity, and they made them all white, all black.
I know. At least I get it as a bit of a gimmick, but I actually thought some of them looked pretty good. But that's the one that bothered me, when it was the Yankees Dodgers, because I wanted to see Yankees Dodgers. There's just something great about that. So like, when I see Notre Dame, like USC or Notre Dame Michigan, that to me looks like college football. It's just like, I see that and I'm like, yes, some of those classic looks. Although, like, you can do it. You can do some of the new stuff pretty well. I thought Oregon's what do they call it? The nightmare green. Which I thought looked black. Like, because I had seen the photos of it, and I thought that was going to be a greener look. That, to me, just looked like black.
You're talking about the jerseys from the Auburn game?
Yeah. Well, the jerseys were white, but the pants and the helmet, was I the only one that just thought that
they
was...
They named that Nightmare Green?
That was Nightmare Green. Did you just think those were black?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Nightmare Green. They looked way different in the photos than they did on the field. It was very strange. Like, they had the little helmet wings had some tinges of green to it, but it just looked like they were wearing black. I guess
in the pictures it does look green, but on the field it looked black. You're right.
Yeah, that's, it was weird. And I think it might be like a color angle thing. Like, maybe they change a little bit. But I think Oregon does a good job of looking, like, for someone that likes traditional looks, Oregon has a good, clean look.
I thought Oregon State's new jerseys were pretty cool on Friday, too.
Yeah, although that didn't go so well.
Like, talking about the jerseys.
Yeah, For all the stuff we had about Oregon, and, you know, we spent most of the day today, and when Rob comes back tomorrow, I'm sure he'll want to get into the Oregon stuff, too. But we'll take a look around the rest of college football, and I'll talk about the Beavs, because I did. I wanted Oregon State to be relevant. I did. I think when the Oregon States and the Washington States of the world are good, to me, that makes the conference, it just makes it that much more interesting. Like, I want Oregon State. Those fans deserve a better product on the field. Although I will say I was a little disappointed for a Friday night, and I think school is in session down there in Corvallis. I thought it was a crappy turnout.
I was shocked.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that Oregon State's bad and has been.
Yeah.
So I understand that will lower attendance. But for week one against a premier, not a premier, but a good Power opponent. 5 opponent. For the opening game of the season, you'd think they'd get close to selling that thing out.
If I was a Beaver fan, I would have shown up to that. Now, I would have walked away really disappointed, but like, I wanted to watch that. And I guess it's different watching on TV versus driving down there. And I get it's a Friday, and so, you know, maybe you got work. it's hard to get down there, but I was excited for that game. I went to a bar and sat down and watched it. And early on, I was like, all right, Oregon State, you know, tit for tat here, right? Throwing some haymakers. And they didn't convert on a couple third downs. I thought Oklahoma State's defense did a good job of batting down some balls. And then once you realize that there was zero chance of Oregon State getting a stop, I think Oklahoma State scored on the first seven possessions.
Oklahoma State scored on every single possession except for two.
Yeah.
And the end of half one.
They
punted twice. Everything else was a touchdown.
Yeah. Didn't it feel great, though, when they got the punt? You're like, hey.
I mean, at that point, it was a 30-point game. So you're like, well, hey, okay, cool.
Like I kept rationalizing in my mind. Like, I was sitting there at the bar, and I was like, okay, just, you know, just need to get a stop here and then get a score. I know. All right. Well, just get a stop here. And no.
Well, and it was also like, oh, they, you know, second and 10. Here we go. Here's the punt. Oh, it's first down again. Oh, it's third and six. Here's the punt. Oh, it's first down again. Okay.
People are saying that school doesn't start at Oregon State. See, I thought it had. So maybe that's.
Either way, I was still disappointed in the turnout.
Maybe there's an excuse there that the students hadn't shown up yet. But
well, yeah, it was clear the students had shown up because the area behind the end zone where I think was the student section
nobody.
Was empty. But even you'd think the stadium would be more full. They panned up to the crowd.
Yeah, it was a bummer.
At kickoff, and you're like, ugh.
Yeah, I was really hoping that that would be a decent turnout on national TV.
I understand.
And that they would have a better showing. And on top of that, the damn elevator got stuck. Like,
That was great. My joke on Twitter for that was, can't stop them on defense, trap the coaches in the elevator. It'll work out.
You couldn't have written a more embarrassing script, right? No one shows up. You get run out of the building by Oklahoma State.
Hey, no. You almost covered. You only lost by 16. The spread was 14. You almost covered.
You got run out of the building. That thing was bad.
They scored a lot, too.
That got bad.
Tristan Jebbia got a touchdown at the end.
That got bad. And then you have the shame.
I'm on your side, Beavs fan.
Of the GD elevator getting stuck and having to delay the game. It's just it was a bad look all around for Oregon State, but you know, you're not going to face many offenses that are as good as Oklahoma State. I mean, Oklahoma State is a lot like Washington State at this point. It doesn't matter who is out there. They're going to put up points, hoping for a better effort. Maybe the defense can improve, but at least what we saw from week one, the Beavs are about what we thought they were. I think they're going to score 30 points a game in the Pac-12. I do. I think they're going to be a top five or six offense in the conference. There's some talent there. Offensive line has improved.
Hodgins is really good.
Dude's a beast. He is a beast. Well, he's not the best because they got a kid down in Colorado, that Chenault kid, that kid's otherworldly. But you're talking about a first-team all Pac-12 performer. You got a couple backs that can run the ball well. Offensive line has improved, and Luton looks pretty good if he can stay healthy. You're going to score points. I honestly just don't know if you're going to stop anybody. It looked the same as last year.
Worse than last year.
You can't cover anybody. You can't get off blocks. There's not a pass rush. It's just all bad.
To me, it looked worse than last year because it felt like there was all this talk of how, oh, it can't be any worse than it was last year. They got to be making improvements, right? You got the new defensive coordinator. It's all should be working well. And then you see Oklahoma State's first drive and it's terrible angle, missed tackle, arm tackle, no effort. 10-yard game turns into a 40-yard game because it's down the sideline and nobody's making a play. And you're like, what is that? This is even worse than last year.
Yeah, it was.
What is happening?
It was bad. And then around the conference, USC tried to give away their game against Fresno State. They needed an interception in the end zone to seal that one away. Clay Helton had it like fourth and two and a half on his side of the 50, and he went for it. Your defense had been playing pretty well most of the game. What the hell are you doing?
Especially after your starting quarterback got hurt.
Yeah, you just gave Fresno State the ball and were like, here, go down. And luckily your defense bailed you out. But yeah, and their quarterbacks, JT Daniels is done for the year. And so they're going to a freshman. It sounds like the Jack Sears kid who was going to be the backup, he put himself in the transfer portal. And I saw today that Clay Helton said that he's going to welcome him back if Jack Sears wants to come back. So that's begging for, please.
Even though you were fourth on our quarterback depth chart, you'll be third now.
Yeah,
maybe you'll have a chance, Jack.
Come on back.
Please?
Didn't look good for USC. I thought Stanford, who...
By the way, I think USC might be in real trouble now that JT Daniels is hurt.
Yes.
He's out for the year. He has an ACL injury. I think they're in real trouble.
And USC's schedule, by the way, is not an easy one. Fresno State gave you everything you could handle, and Fresno State's a good team, but now you got Stanford, although we don't know if Stanford's going to have Costello. He went out with a concussion. So we'll see. His looked bad. He got his head taken off. So we'll see if he's ready to play. But Stanford, who did survive and win against Northwestern, wasn't really pretty before Costello went out. I'm not convinced that Stanford is a top 20 team in the country, but you still got Stanford, then BYU, then Utah, then Washington, then Notre Dame. I'm sorry, but there may be one more win in the next five games for USC. Clay Helton may be fired after Notre Dame. I could easily see them losing to Stanford. They're at BYU. BYU isn't great, but they're not a road apple either. They're not just going to stomp on them. But Utah and Washington and Notre Dame all have a chance to just alley whip USC. That could get real, real ugly for them in a hurry.
Do you fire Clay Helton even though JT Daniels got hurt?
Yes, because I think Clay Helton is the wrong guy. I've said it all along. I don't know why. You don't need a program like USC. You don't need 4 years to figure out if he's the guy or not. You just don't. And right now there's nothing that leads me to believe that Clay Helton is the right guy at USC. I thought he was a bad hire when they made it. So yes, get rid of him and go find yourself a real coach. You're USC. You don't need to go on the cheap. You've got the money and you've got the resources. There's no excuse for USC to be that bad. UW looked good. Jacob Eason passed his test. He looked like an absolute beast, but it was against Eastern Washington. So, you know, what can you really tell about that? But they played 64 guys. UW is deep, 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 deep. And right now I would say that if you're going power rankings, I would say Washington 1, Oregon 2, Utah 3, then maybe Washington State in there again, because we don't know what Washington State has. But I think Oregon.
Well, Washington State played a same level of team as Washington did.
And housed them.
And completely housed them, yeah. And played better on offense than Easton did.
That Anthony Gordon, who was the kid that ended up winning the job, I think he had 6 incomplete passes and 5 touchdowns.
And I think 420 yards passing.
Yeah. Look, Washington State's going to score points, plain and simple. Washington State just, no one gives them any credit, but Washington State is a damn good football team. And it doesn't really matter who they roll out there. Mike Leach has that thing humming, but for as disappointing as the Oregon loss was, from a talent standpoint, Oregon's going to be favored in most of their games. And the Pac-12 North may come down to that game with UW, and it's going to be up in Washington. I think that's going to be a tough one. And then, by the way, prove you can beat Washington State because they've got you 4 years in a row.
Just a funny note. So Washington State played New Mexico State, who, by the way, is a real FBS team, although basically at the very bottom of the barrel. They win 58-7. You want to take a guess where New Mexico State's playing next week?
Who do they got?
Alabama.
Oh, geez.
On the road. So they lost to Washington State on the road 58-7. What's that final score going to be against Bama?
Good Lord. Dude, just imagine being one of those kids in the locker room. Like, you're shell-shocked after seeing Washington State. And so, hey, by the way, welcome to Alabama.
Yeah.
Maybe in some ways it's better to play Alabama because at least they'll just maybe run the ball on you, burn some clock.
Over and over.
As opposed to just going out there and getting slaughtered by 6-yard crossing routes, having to play in space.
Because you know they're not running the ball.
No. That was all kinds of bad. All right, one more segment. We'll put a wrap on the week one that is college football, and then we'll move on into Club 1080. Primetime here on The Fan.
Primetime with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Wrapping up week one of college football, we've kind of made our way through the Pac-12. Looking ahead at week two to see what we have, because some of these we may not find out with like UW and Washington State. We won't know for a little bit what anyone really has. And there's not a lot of marquee matchups. Oregon better get their mind right. Nevada just got done pulling off an upset at Purdue, and Nevada can score a little bit. I would think that from a physical standpoint, Oregon will be okay. You just can't afford to let that one beat you twice. Cal Washington could be interesting. We got Stanford, USC, Oregon State, Hawaii. So not necessarily a great slot. Nebraska, Colorado. That'd be a big one for Colorado if they can pull that off.
One for Nebraska, who hasn't looked good at all.
No, Nebraska looked like crap. Did you watch any of Nebraska's game?
I think I flipped it on for maybe 5 minutes and I just saw it was close. But I was flipping around. I was using that little guide thing on Comcast where it just shows you the scores and you can move around. So I kept an eye on it, but I didn't actually watch it.
Yeah, they were playing Southern Alabama, and they ended up winning 35-21, and they had 3 non-offensive touchdowns. And by the way, They got outgained by 38 yards by the Jags. I think Nebraska averaged like 3.6 yards per play. I mean, the offense was anemic. So all that talk about year two in Nebraska, maybe we wait until year three. And Colorado, who did look really good against Colorado State, that'd be a huge feather in their cap if they could. I'm trying to see where that's at. That's in Boulder. So that's one that I kind of want to keep an eye on. One, I like Colorado. I want Colorado to be good. And Mel Tucker seems like he's a likable fellow. I would love to see them put one on Nebraska, because Nebraska is a top 25 team and no one's thinking anything of Colorado this year. That's kind of what I'm pulling for.
They still have Montez as their quarterback. Colorado does, right?
Yeah. They got Montez, and sure. Chenault is the best player in the conference. He really is. He's the best player in the Pac-12. And then if you want the lookout as far as Pac-12 looking bad, I give you San Diego State and UCLA, because that could be another.
You
really
think UCLA will lose that game?
UCLA, I think UCLA stinks. And San Diego State's a good program. That is one that I absolutely could see UCLA dropping there. And then Stanford, USC, and we'll see. Cal, Washington. So we got a decent slate. And if Oregon State's going to win a game, maybe Hawaii could be the one.
Are you sure? Because Hawaii put up a ton of points in Arizona, and I want to say Oregon State's defense is worse.
Yeah, but they should be able to score a bunch against Hawaii too. So take the over. You got Hawaii and you got Cal Poly, right? The next 2 weeks.
Cal Poly should be a win, right?
If Oregon State's going to win a game, it's going to be in the next 2 weeks. Don't write them off against Hawaii. Oregon State's going to put up some points. I feel pretty confident in that.
I'm just nervous. I'm nervous after the Arizona game. Everyone talked about, hey, watch Hawaii against Arizona so you have an idea of what you're going to be running into when they play Oregon State. And I watched that game and I saw what they were going to be running into and I went, ooh, that's not going to be as easy as it looked on the schedule. And yeah, I'm nervous for it.
Someone's saying San Diego State won 6-0 against, yikes. Yeah, San Diego State won 6-0 against Weber State.
That's, wow, okay. Maybe UCLA can win a game.
Yeah, we'll see about that. I
mean, you put up 6 points against an FCS team?
Yeah, San Diego State year in and year out.
They got a shutout.
San Diego State year in and year out usually puts out a pretty quality product, but yeah, yikes. 6 points against the mighty Weber State Wildcats. You know, the truth of the matter is, dude, college football just is ugly right now. It just is. Outside of the top, what, 5-6 teams, there's a lot of sketchy play. All the problems that you have in the NFL with lack of contact, lack of tackling, you know, you don't have two-a-days anymore. It's very condensed in the work you can do. All that is multiplied by three when you get into college and realize that you're not dealing with professionals, you're dealing with kids. And the truth of the matter is there's going to be some really ugly play early on, and it doesn't mean that it can't get better. But unless you're named Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Ohio State, Oklahoma, look, there's just going to be some ugly performances, especially early on, and you just hope the teams can rebound and can play a little bit better. You know, and that goes for Oregon as well. Everyone, so many overreaction from Duck fan today. What's the number one thing we've got is what? Cristobal's a bum. Arroyo's the worst play caller in the world. Justin Herbert is overrated, and the Oregon running backs are all crappy, and none of them can run, right? All of that after one bad half of football, a mistake-laden half of football. But even as poorly as you played, you still should have beaten the number 16 team in the country, essentially during a road game. Telling you, Oregon's going to be fine. Don't know if they're going to be where you want them to be, but that's a team that's going to win a lot of football games this year. Are we come back? What do we got in the club? I do have a bar etiquette question and a frustration I have with, are the a-holes winning? Are the people that just don't give an F anymore, are they winning out there, and what can be done about it? A run-in I had during the Oregon State game, by the way. That leads off the club.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.